to Proactive. We are the podcast diving deep into the realms of productivity, not just a podcast about producing more in business and more achievement. Each week, our hosts, Dr. Tina with Richie and Arthur, and our guests each week are here to provide you with tips and tools so you can supercharge your best life. We at Proactive believe being productive is about being productive mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. We want you to be well-balanced. So if you are ready to produce your best life and you are ready to balance being with doing, please hit subscribe, please share with friends, and get proactive and be productive. And now let's welcome our guests for us today, Ashley North. Ashley North is an entertainer and an entrepreneur. She likes to sing and do much more. And we are going to learn from her how to be productive at entertaining others while entertaining yourself in life. So take it away, Miss Ashley, and tell us about you and how you produce your best life.
Okay, well, I've produced my best life since I was, 7 years old. So I've started as an entrepreneur, as a pianist, and then moved up to a singer and just continued as an entrepreneur from everything from being an entertainer to owning my own production company. You know, my production company is produced for, Bill and Melinda Gates and doing different productions from music videos to working with legends in the business. And as an actor, doing the same. So I've always strived to be bigger and better every year, and I continue to do so. I think productivity, it comes from within, and you surround yourself by the things you can't do. You surround yourself by people that can help you do those things. So that's how I specifically help myself to be more of a productive individual and to be a productive entertainer and a productive entrepreneur.
So tell Amazing. Me about age seven. Sorry, Arthur, go ahead, but I just want to hear what you were doing at age seven.
It's funny. My parents put me in piano lessons because I tried to steal the car and drive it to the neighbor's house. And so they put me in classical piano lessons so I wouldn't become the neighborhood car thief, basically. And, so I started playing classical piano. When I was in my piano lessons, I had a natural ear for piano. And so I would start listening to Carole King because my mother was a huge Carole King fan, and I would start playing the piano what I was listening to, and the piano teacher says she really doesn't need me, because she's playing whatever she listens to. And it just really, my career flourished from there, and I always loved being in front of people. Now I would get a little scared, just like anybody else. I would be nervous, and 7 years old, you're just a seven-year-old, but I just enjoyed it once I got out there. But I didn't sing until later. It was more of just the playing the piano part. And then I would go and, in Oklahoma, that's where I'm from, you go in front of the church and you play for the church because that's your outlet in the beginning. And so I went and played for the church, and I played for the church for a while. And, I started out as a Baptist. I'm a convert to Catholicism now, but that's a long story. But I played for the Baptist church. And when I did that, I remember the deacon of the church saying, why don't you sing? And I said, I can play the piano, but I really don't want to look at people. So if I look at them, I can't do it, But I was just a little girl. Like I just wanted to play my piano in front of people. I just wanted to get better at it. Then once I discovered I had a voice, and it was really the piano teacher later on that discovered I had the voice, because I would just go in my room by myself and I would sing. I learned how to sing from Carole King and Dolly Parton and Tanya Tucker. And I would just listen, most kids wanted Dolly Parton or wanted Barbie dolls, and I wanted Dolly Parton records. I just was that person, and I just always astute to music and just loved it so much. And then I moved on to play guitar and learned how to play trumpet, and a lot of things with strings, just trying to just stay out of trouble. And that's how I moved on to entertain and in Branson and worked with Glen Campbell and Mel Tillis and those folks, and was homeschooled after that because I was traveling so much. I was a stutterette when I was 12 or 13, I think it was, yeah, with Mel, and he was really a great guy. Now, Glen Campbell was horrible to work with, but, you know, he was just a raging person, but he has beautiful music, and I can't ever deny that he has beautiful music, so, but he was a raging person to work with.
So, I'm sorry, did you say you were a stutterer?
No, I'm not a stutterer at all. Mel Tillis, his backup singers were called stutterettes.
Oh, okay.
And that's so, yeah.
Interesting.
So, yeah, they were. Yeah, so I worked with him, but I also opened, and then I worked for him too. And so that when you did backup, they called him stutterettes.
So I'm curious where that name came from.
Because he was a tremendous stutterer.
Ah, interesting. So he was celebrating stuttering, actually.
Yeah, so he just always brought it to the forefront. Really a beautiful man, you know. It was, I think I was at the Grammys when he did pass, you know, and they were attributing him, and, you know, a tear came to my eyes, and it was just so, it was, you know, it just broke my heart because he was so good to me when I was little.
That's lovely. I'm curious, did he stutter when he sang or only when he spoke? Did he talk to you about that?
Only when he spoke.
Yeah.
Only when he spoke. People
he was
really
probably
don't
great with
stutter
kids.
When they sing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
He was really great with kids.
It's a different part of your brain, supposedly. Mm. And that's why you can sing. But I think anyone who's gone through such a traumatic thing as a child is, I would think, would be kind to children. You know?
Well, so. I think a lot of it, yeah. You know, I think stuttering, just some people stutter. I mean, even our president now, that's his detriment, is that he actually stutters. President Biden actually is a stutterer as well. So, and I think a lot of people don't realize it. They just think that he's a little slow, but he's actually a stutterer.
Yeah, there's a really good book about that by a news guy who is a stutterer who ended up having to cover Biden, and then he wrote an article about Biden. This is just an aside. And then so many people responded that he ended up doing a whole book and an expose. It's a really interesting story. And of course, I can't think of the name now, but my brain is stuttering.
I think we all get that from time to time. I mean, I do too. I mean, I have moments these days because it is what it is. As I get older, I get a stuttery mind, and I think it's the MS.
I'm looking back in your history, right? So tell us about Texas and Oklahoma Music Hall of Fame. How did that happen?
Well, it's funny. I grew up on the Oklahoma Opry, which it took me 9 times to get in. And the guy just did not like me very much. He did not like my voice. My voice was deep. He did not like deep voices. My dad was kind of like the local, I mean, how do I say this? My dad was kind of like the local gangster, so like he didn't want to let me in anyway because everybody was always scared of my dad, and he was always on the front page of the newspaper, and it was really embarrassing. So, you know, so he took me aside, and he thought my parents were stage parents, you know, and that was one of the reasons. I mean, I was dragging my parents there. They weren't dragging me. And he says, you know, Ashley, do you want to do this? And I said, yeah, I want to do this. And I said, this is why the 9 times I've been here, I'm not going to stop until you let me in the door, you know, and that's how I am today, too. I mean, I kind of kick doors down, and if I can't kick them down, I'm going to keep coming back to your door until I annoy you. I'll tell you another story about that later with Robert De Niro. It's a long story. But he finally, he says, well, what? Why do you want to be on my show? I said, listen, I may not be the most talented, but I have a big family and I can make you a lot of money and I can get people in the door. So if you want, you should have me come. You should have me sing in your show because I can make you a lot of money. Because I thought, you know what? If this doesn't work, this is going to work. And that's actually how he hired me. And, you know, he came out of the... He came out and he told my parents, he goes, "You know, she's both talented, but she can make me a lot of money." He goes, "You know, she's 10."
You know what? I just
My dad
want,
goes, "Well."
I want to stop for a minute to point out to our listeners, right? Such important lessons that you learned at such a young age of don't take no, keep asking, and don't just ask in the same way every time. Try and be creative and see what the other person wants from you. So, you know, we go through life and people want things, but nobody wants necessarily to give it to you just because you want it. So what can you give in exchange? And you learn that at 10. I want to be on stage. What can I give to him? He wants money, right? And you made that connection and you didn't take no for an answer. And that laid the foundation for you probably to be super
Totally.
successful at anything that you do. No just means I have to ask again and I have to get more creative in what can I give? If I want something, I got to give first. And so I just
Well,
want our, I want, for me, I'm stopping to listen to that because it's so powerful.
now,
Well,
Ashley has a hugely big heart. Okay. Over time, she and I have talked. And she's given me a big hug, so I'm grateful for that. But I'll tell you, she pushes. She wants it, and it's amazing. I mean, look at these accomplishments. And as you said, Tina, she does not take no, which is awesome.
It comes from, you know, my parents had multiple businesses growing up and they were self-employed and they had to push and strive and everything was successful. And they taught me if I'm going to be something, they didn't say that you're a girl and you have to be this. They said, if you're going to be successful, this is what you do. They didn't categorize me as a girl and this is what you do. They didn't care that I was a girl. They said, this is what you have to do, you know, to be successful. And you're going to have to push your way through because you are a girl. You're going to have to be pushed a little harder. But like, they didn't tell me, they didn't genderize me. They didn't tell me that I couldn't do something. They said, just go do it.
So the other
And
thing that
this
I
is
would
how
say,
you do it.
yeah, but what
And
you said is your voice. It's just an interesting concept of, I love what you picked up and didn't pick up. So your family said, you can be whatever you want to be. That's
You
what you
want to
heard at,
be.
right. That's what you heard at home and you trusted that. But what you said was this guy didn't like your voice because you weren't probably the high pitched, you know, soprano for a girl, right? So he had a box of what girls were supposed to be like. And I love again that you said, hey, dude, this is me and I can still make you money. I don't have to be the girl that you think this girl is supposed to be. So kudos to you.
Yeah, I
Now,
just, you know, this, I'm not, I can make you money no matter what, you know, like that's really, and really that's the always going to be the bottom line because it is a business. And and I think that's something that my parents taught me at very young. Everything's a business. And, you know, if you treat it like a business, it'll take care of you forever. If you treat it like a party, every party must end. And I read that as a quote from Reba McEntire. And I always remembered that, you know, it's like if you treat this like a business, it's always, there's always points, it's going to have ups and downs, but it's always going to take care of you if you treat it like a business. And I've always treated it like a business, you know, I have fun, I have all the crazy stories, but I've always treated it like a business that it
wow.
is.
So tell us, speaking of business, tell us about Orange in Black.
Oh, Orange is the New Black. That was a crazy thing. I went in.
A great show.
As yeah, I went in at first as a background person, and then I moved up as a character, and I just kind of started like I went in, and it was supposed to be the biggest Halloween costume of that season, and they featured me the first day I was on the show, and I stayed there for 5 years. And you know, it was such a fun and work environment. I loved having a job that I didn't have to wear makeup, and I could, the worst I looked, you know, the better it was on the show. So, I mean, I could wake up and have every hair on my head standing straight up, and I, you know, it was great. You know, sometimes you had lines, sometimes you were just featured. Sometimes, I mean, there was one season that they had a bed bug feature or something, that the whole prison had bed bugs, so you had to walk around in your underwear for a whole season, you know, so that was kind of weird. But, like, yeah. I mean,
it's a great show. That was a really good show.
Yeah, there was, you know, it was a mostly, you know, the whole staff, as far as the production staff, were mostly lesbians, so you had to worry about lesbians hitting on you every once in a while. But other than that, I mean, you were all right. You know, but like, it just, you know, you went to wardrobe, you know, your day was getting up, going to the studio, getting into wardrobe, unless you had to go to, you know, upstate every once in a while. And there was this old psychiatric ward. It was a children's psychiatric ward that they had actually bought for this show. And they had a specific area that they cleaned out, but the rest of it was still like, not cleaned from when the children were there. So when we didn't have scenes, all of us would go back and we would sneak around, and there would be like handprints of the children, because they used to do electroshock therapy in this place. So you could feel like the spirits around there and stuff. And you would see like Randall made this, and you see the children's shoes. Oh, it was a creepy place.
Wow. Where did they shoot?
It was in Nyack.
Oh, wow.
They shot the most of the interiors at Kaufman Astoria Studios in Astoria, and then the rest of it was, you know, like the exteriors were shot, you know, in Nyack. But no, but that psychiatric ward was like insane. You'd see like the little shoes, and I was like, oh my God. I think, getting off the subject of Orange for a second, I worked one time at Law and Order SVU, and there was we had to go to not Rikers, what's the other one that's upstate?
Sing Sing.
Now that's a creepy place. And so if you're filming there, they actually stamp your hand, and you have to put it under a blue light. And I forgot to get my hand stamped, because I just ran in there because I was but if you don't stamp your hand, they don't want to let you back out. And I was on a business call, so I'm like going in there, and I'm just trying to like run in there and get my prison. Because I don't know what it is about my headshot for a couple of years. They were always putting me in jail. Like, I don't know what that was about. But, you know, Mariska Hargitay and Ice-T had to vouch that I wasn't an actual prisoner to let me back out.
Wow.
You're lucky they liked you.
Good thing. I said, I have to go because I have to go to work at Sing Sing now. And the guy was like, what? I was talking to him about a production company, about some artist or something. I said, I got to go. I got to go to Sing Sing now. And he just, I'm sure that guy was on the other line going, what? You know, you're hanging up the phone and you're trying to get, you know, up to the, it was really funny. You know, there's been some crazy moments with some of the set stuff. I think one time I had to be in the psychiatric ward. I mean, I was constantly either being some crazy person or like literally going to jail or being in the jail psychiatric ward.
So what's the story you tell yourself when you're playing a role like that? And how does it feel when you're trying to play a role, you know, that is off, you know, off sanity, if you will?
I just visualize on my Aunt Barbara. Sorry.
Okay.
No, I have an aunt that's like a little off the beating path.
Uh-huh. We all have somebody,
visualize,
right?
I'm her. No, I think the weirdest role that I ever played, and I got a phone call from home from my mother, and I'm telling you, she like wore me out. They had me do a role, and it was a show that was called Mysteries of Lore. It was on NBC. It lasted a couple of seasons. They had us do this party, and they had me in my underwear dancing with this with this guy that he was they call him a little person to be politically correct, but he was like 4'6", okay? And I'm 5'9", and they had me wearing heels, so I'm over 6 feet tall with the heels on. They're like, get down and dance with this guy, me and Deborah Messing, who are about the same height. And if I got down any further, I was gonna fall. So at the opening of the show, you see me dancing with this like this is, I'm gonna say it, this midget in my underwear. And I guess my mother had turned on the television, and here I am at the opening of this show dancing with this little man in my underwear. And I mean, I got the call from home, and my mother was just yelling at me for like 30 minutes. I said, Mom, it's just a part of the show. I don't care. You shouldn't be dancing in your underwear with short people. It was the funniest thing, though.
Oh my God, I really want to hear this story about you kicking this door in. If I'm honest, these are
Huh?
some amazing stories. But you said that there's a story that you want to tell us about kicking the door in, and I've got to circle
Oh,
back to this because this
so
is going to stick with me.
I had this thing that I wanted to work with Robert De Niro. And there was a film that he did, I can't remember. It was about his daughter who sold like stuff on something Joy. I think it was Joy. And I wanted to work with him so bad. And I kept like aggravating the casting directors to the point because I just wanted to work with the guy. I didn't care if I was background. I didn't care if I was shining his shoes. And so I just kept aggravating him, calling him back, calling him back. I mean, I've never really needed an agent because I can just aggravate people myself. So didn't get in that show. Then I got in the film that they did about there was a film about Bernie Madoff, and anyway, I got into that film, and I had to testify against Robert De Niro. And so I didn't care. I didn't care. Like I said, I didn't care if I was cut out of it. I didn't care if I stood in the corner. I think my testimony ended up getting cut out, but and then they used my picture in there as one of the victims. And I was cool with that too. I didn't care, but it was just amazing to work with him more than once. And I just wanted to be, he's like, he does all of his scenes in like one take. And it's just, he just blows my mind every time I've worked with him. It's just, he never, it's never, and I want to be like that, just where it's one take, boom. And I try to do that. So you're not taking everybody's time. I mean, there's actors that I will remain nameless that want their Emmy or their whatever, and they just keep doing scenes over and over, and you want to throw yourself out the window, and I'm not going to say anything to them. And they just can't, they can't. I said that like that, so I don't actually say their name, but like when I can recite your lines, then just stop. But
My coach said,
So,
Richie taught me practice makes permanent, not perfect. And
practice makes permanent. Yeah.
we have to aim
Well,
for practice,
it's
not
like
perfection.
this. It's like just do your best and be the best that you can be, and don't try to outperfect everybody else. And that's it. Like that's what entertainment's about. If you don't get it this time, you'll get it the next time. And if you don't, then it just may not be meant to be for you right now. That's not a bad thing. I mean, if you're on a hit show, that is your reward, sometimes. And that's it. And that's what people don't understand. They get all caught up in this stuff, and they don't understand that really what it comes down to, the reward is that you get up every day and get to go, play dress up and play pretend all day. Like it's fun.
And get paid for it.
Yeah.
So we're running out of time a little, but I have to ask you about Café Con Leche because you know, Ashley, I love Zumba, and we sing that song. We play and dance to that song. So w tell us what you did with
Yes.
that on Footprint.tv.
It is a talk show basically that is kind of like I Love Lucy meets The View. Okay. And so basically everybody can speak Spanish but me, and it's kind of like the Spanish culture meets my culture, and it kind of collides, and it's really kind of very funny. And we've interviewed people and we just have a good time, you know, and but it, we kind of go back forth between the cultures. And my co-host Willie, he's from the Bronx and he's Puerto Rican, and I'm, you know, me. And we've just had a really great time. And it's been nice to have a multicultural show like that to where you can learn a lot more about another culture besides yourself.
That's life, right? Trying to see the world through everybody
Yeah.
else's eyes. And then we all get a little more empathy, compassion that reality isn't real. It's just what you see and how you make it.
You know, being from Oklahoma, you have to remember most of the cultural things that we see is mostly a Native American culture. And so until I moved to, you know, when I lived in West Palm in New York, I didn't really see other cultures until, like, it really, you know, like there wasn't a lot of, you know, Puerto Ricans or Jewish people or this or that in Oklahoma. To where I was exposed to those cultures and learned about them and you know more about them and how you know their environments really you know change our environment, and it's really been beneficial to me, you know. And sometimes I'm calling my mom back and all these cultures and what I've learned about them and about their religions and how they've helped me grow as an individual, and it's been really fun and really great. You
I
know, and
love
I know
it.
that sounds silly to y'all, but you know,
No.
I think the more we learn about each other, I think you should be a melting pot completely. I mean,
I mean, we live in a
and just
multicultural
be
world.
open-minded.
And that's
Yeah,
exactly it, you
and
know. In the UK, in England, we take it in our stride about how multicultural we are. And I grew up in the northeast of England. So, you know, the ranges of ethnicity up there was, you know, certainly it was quite broad. And moving over to the US, it's a bigger place, and there's just as many different cultures and ethnicities over here. But actually, there's a lot that I hadn't ever come across. So, you know, South American cultures that came in, and you know, Native American, which actually has a quite a large impact, the Native American side, on the charity side of my life, because we actually built the charity around the Cherokee legend of the two wolves. So well, since I've come over here, I've done a lot of learning as well, and it's really interesting that you touch on that point, because I think that's something that we all need to create a better society.
I'm Cherokee and Irish, and my grandfather was 100% Cherokee. And you know,
Wow.
it is something that isn't always celebrated. And I don't really go into my culture because I take more after the Irish side than I do the Cherokee side because I'm one of the lighter ones of my dad's family.
Wow.
Because my mother's side is are Irish and German.
Yeah.
So I you know, so when people always give me the Elizabeth Warren joke, and I'm like, well, my family went to the Trail of Tears and I have the roll number to prove it. So
Wow.
it when you say that, it's very interesting because I mean, I do know a lot about my culture as I call it, because it you know, and I've learned, especially in, you know, with the people I work with now, about not only the Jewish faith, the Jewish culture. And it's been very fascinating to me because I always loved like theology as well as learning about different cultures. And it's that they've really taught me a lot. And it's really been very fascinating to me and to grow and learn and just be a better citizen for the people I work with.
It's great.
Amazing. I love the
Yeah.
attitude, even though I know you for so long. It's great. It's great. One of the things when we were talking before, Ashley, you said a tip for us to get ahead and live our best life, in addition to never giving up, right, is speak to your social media. So, what is that? What are you thinking on that?
Well, I mean, my social media, I always, because first of all, I speak a bit of it now. I mean, before I was really afraid of it because of my career, but about my MS and how I positive, in a positive mode, how that I can motivate my career through my MS because I've had it for 12 years now, and how throughout my career I've had to hide it and to have a career, and I just couldn't really do that anymore. And I now try to talk about, as a model, because I am a plus model, to try to talk about body positivity and doing this with MS and trying to show people that, don't give in to your disease, but, fight back for yourself and just be the best you can be. I mean, not every day is going to be positive. Not every day is going to be perfect. Just be the best you can be. And you can't overload expectations. Believe me, I try. I try to see how many things I can load in a day until I wear myself out. So, but that's all you can do.
Invite you to take time to rest when, and I, you're talking to the person who doesn't listen to her own advice
Me too.
about to get ahead, we have to stop what we're doing and do less to do more. And it's taken me a lot of years on this planet, at least to speak it, to put it into practice. I'm still working on that, but I invite you to accept that doing less sometimes is doing more and
It's
not beat
true.
yourself up on it. Right? We're
Yeah,
really on the planet to play. You get to play for a living, right? So we're really here to
Yes.
play. Play dress up. I dress
Yes.
up as a doctor. You dress up as an actor. I just play one on TV.
I get to I get to dress up more as a model, which is really fun. And, you get to play in people's clothings and creations and help them bring it alive so they can sell it, and that's really the most fun for me, and because you never know what they're going to do. Last week, that was the craziest thing. You never know. One lady gave me a fur jacket, another one gives you a purse, and another one just, give you a t-shirt, and the next one may give you like a furry bra and underwear. You just do not know what people are going to hand you when you're at fashion. I've had wore some crazy things over time.
Go.
So.
What a great job. You get to sing, you get to dance, you get to act, you get to model. I went into the wrong
Well, you don't want to
profession.
see me dance.
Okay.
You don't want to see me dance. I have two left feet. I definitely got my father's left feet. My dad used to dance like Elvis with a hitch in his hip, and that's why I play instruments.
Okay, there we go. All right. So we're going to have to end today on that note, and I'm going to get you on the dance floor one day. So, my friends, it's
Alrighty.
time. It's all the time we have for today. I want to thank Ashley for her amazing insights. Please support her. Check out her links, her web, social media, and more. And she does speak to social media. So check out her links. The details will all be in the show notes. Remember that our podcast drops every Monday at 9 a.m. Please subscribe. Please share with friends. And until next time, please remember, time is our most valuable resource. Get proactive, be productive, and so that you produce your very best life, whether you dance with 2 feet or one.